All right. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Jessica Stewart, and I am here with the October 2015 Coach the Coach Practicum 3, Class 3, and this is Group D, which is for delightful, which means we are the best. You'd think that would mean we would be Group B, but we are not. Ergo, therefore, we win. So today we're going to check in on the Living Space tool, and there is actually quite a bit of reading that you were asked to do in preparation for this class, and we'll cover some of that. But first, I'd like to do my little check-in with everybody just to make sure you guys are getting your voice in the room, getting your energy in the room, the virtual room, of course. And it also helps me take attendance. Ta-da! Because I know she loves to go first, I'm going to call on Rachel first. Hello, Rachel. One word or one sound for how you are doing right now.
I was going to say flower.
Cool. Laurel.
Hesitant.
Okay. I don't think Mary's on the line or Carrie. Kathleen.
Not at all, because hesitant was what was...
Hesitant, that's what you're going to steal?
I'm just not sure. Yeah.
Okay, no worries. Linda, are you on the line?
Yes. Lonely.
Oh. We're here with you.
Thanks.
All right. Lonely. And Tiffany.
Meditative.
Slinging out the big words. And Kathy.
I think scattered.
Okay. Nikki.
Clear.
I'm going to put that. Clear. I wish I could capture the tone, but I can't. Electra, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hello.
Hello. Rushed. Okay. I just got here.
We'll take a few deep breaths and settle in. All will be well. Meg, are you on the line? I didn't see her, but maybe she'll join later. And then Kristen.
I actually have two words. First one that came to me was breathe, and then the next one was open.
Those work well together.
Thank you.
And my word, I'm a little bummed out today. I don't know if that's one word, but the snow's kind of got me down, quite honestly.
So. I think you can make bummed out one word.
Bummed-out.
Bummed out.
Bummed out. Yeah, if you say it fast enough, it's one word.
Right.
So good. So I'm so excited to be here with you. Even though I'm bummed out about the snow, I'm excited to be here because there is no snow in my heart and with my friends that I've had a lovely chance to meet most, if not all of you. I know that there's a picture of us floating out there somewhere, which is exciting. I hope someone sends it.
I have a good one, but I have a couple good ones. I have some spoon bending pictures too. But I sent
cool.
it to some people, but I didn't have everybody's number, so I'll try again.
If you want to send it to me, it's jstewart@marthabeck.com. I can.
Okay. I will send it to you.
Really, it's about me and me wanting
Jay
to see it, though.
Stewart. I'll find you. I'm going to write it right there. Right on my Turtle Steps page.
Yes, excellent. Turtle Step, write down Jessica's email. See, you've already got it. And then within 24 hours, you can take your next turtle step.
Mm-hmm. You can
so
be my accountability partner.
Exactly. Oh, I will be. So today, as I said, there's really just a lot of materials that are in the binder, but I'm really going to focus on around the Living Space tool and coaching using that. And then we can use some of the sort of ancillary or complementary tools as part of the Living Space tool, both in this class and then in our next class when we do Wildly Improbable Goals. Wigs and turtle steps and Living Space tools and all of it go really well together. Before I do that, I wanted to just check in with you guys and see, are there any questions about any of the other things that you kind of read about? Turtle steps we'll be covering as part of our coaching, so we can definitely do that. The three B's, usually, sometimes, sorry, my dog is going to bark now, sometimes come out in these sessions, but sometimes not. So I might cover the three B's if that works. Today. And then the other, I was just like, how many things can we cram into one section? And then any questions about conation and the conative style and then essentially the Kolbe index. So from the reading, any questions on any of that, anything that you read that we might not get a chance to go in depth today on otherwise? Do you feel clear and confident about how you might use the three B's?
It's Kristen. I just wanted to say that Susan sort of introduced us to that in the first practicum.
Right. She did. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. That's the challenge.
Right.
Yeah, the three B's and the body compass really go together. You know, the way I think of it is it's we calibrate the body compass, and then the homework that I normally give people is I actually have them look at their upcoming week, people in their life, activities that they do on a daily basis, just really just the things that they kind of fill their life with. And then I have them use the body compass on it and using the negative 10 to positive 10, kind of give assigned numbers, like people they work with, how much money they make. And some of those we use the three B's on. We bag it, better it, barter it, depending on, you know, if it's in the 0 to negative 10 space, we look at how they can bag it, better it, barter it. And also you get an opportunity for some of those things to do some thought work and to do some thought dissolving, because our body compass is influenced by our belief systems. And so sometimes it's not as cut and dry as we like to think it might be, and so we end up using the body compass as an introduction to actually thought work as well. And, you know, it's really – it's where your intuition, your coaching intuition, plays sort of the most powerfully. Is someone will say, oh, well, my salary is $200,000 a year, and it's like a negative three. And you're kind of like, huh, all right, let's think about that. Well, let's look at that. And then, and through coaching, you might discover that it creates a tremendous amount of pressure on that person. It's they love the job, but they hate feeling like they, quote, have to do something. And so you begin to notice those red flag words, the have to, must, should, can't. And then you are offered an opportunity for coaching. And then sometimes it's just straight up like folding laundry. I have to do laundry this week, otherwise I will go naked in the house, which might actually be a positive thing. I don't know. But chances are you might want to wear pants if it's snowing out. And so is there a way to bag it, better it, barter it? Bag it, no. Better it or barter it? I make my husband fold my clothes. The way I make him do that is I just leave them in bags around the bedroom until he gets frustrated and folds them for me. That may or may not work. It works for me, but it may not work for you. So, true fact. Okay, so does that make sense around the three B's? Honestly, I use them all the time, which is why I wanted to make sure that I touched on them today. Okay, you might see some materials out there about the five B's or the four B's, and the truth is there are only three. Martha just got really excited and started adding B's, and we realized really the essence is they all derive down to bag it, better it, or barter it. Boundary it would be a way to better it, which is where you put clear boundaries around a task, where you set aside, you know, 10 minutes to check your email and reply to your email, whatever. I like Boop It myself. I don't know what that looks like, but Boop It is my favorite bee. And I'm pretty sure that's a better it. So, any questions about the three bees or anything else in our voluminous material?
No.
Have you guys taken the Conative, the Colby Index?
No.
Yes.
Not.
Yes. I did. Yeah,
so you get a discount, too, if you haven't. There's a discount on it. You can get it for $30. Let me tell you, it was one of the best assessments I've ever taken. And so if you haven't taken it, I'm always a little surprised because I'm a fact finder, so I'm always excited about. And I learned that through the Conative test. But I'm so excited to see myself sort of and how I take action viewed as a strength rather than as a negative thing. So, Tiffany, you said you took it a long time ago. Was that you?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What are you? Do you remember?
I'm the quick start. Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah.
I just jump in.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I will say about the Conative test that I think is really important, especially if you use it with clients or if you want to, you know, really go a little bit deeper, is that a low number does not mean that you do not have those capabilities. So, for example, I'm a 3 follow-through, which would mean that I like to improvise systems as opposed to have rigid systems. So I think I've noticed a lot of people like, oh, I can't get anything done because I'm not a follow-through. And it's like, well, that's just patently untrue because otherwise you must be able to get something done. Otherwise, you wouldn't be wearing pants today. But maybe you aren't, actually. I shouldn't use that as an example. But ultimately, though, we have the quick start, we have the implementer, we have the follow-through, and we have the fact finder. We possess all of those strengths. It's how we do it or how we use it that varies. So a low implementer doesn't mean that you can't fix things or you don't like knitting. It just might mean that you prefer to visualize an outcome versus actually doing a hands-on activity with it. So I love to design landscaping around my house, and then I like to hire people to do the work because 30 minutes of gardening is about all I've got in a season. That's not even in a day, that's a season. So, and it doesn't mean I can't go out and do more. It's just my preference, my Conative preference is I like to have the big ideas, and then I like to have somebody who's a high implementer who loves getting their hands dirty and do the work instead. So does that make sense for those of you who are interested?
Yeah, where do we find that discount?
I was just thinking it's on your learning space. I'm going to have to find it exactly what the file's called, but it's something like, you know what, I can't even remember. Like,
there's
I always know
link.
Where to find it. Oh, it's under practical stuff.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, there's a link to it under.
Yeah. Do you remember? It's my...
It is under the practical.
Yeah, and then I think it's under Colby Conative Style. That would be it.
Yep.
You know, it would be fun if we did I haven't taken it yet, but I know some of you guys have, if we could all put our styles out there, because...
I'd love that.
Yeah, because it's such a collaborative tool.
Yeah, I mean, really, ultimately, it's very, very powerful when you're working in building your coaching practice to surround yourself with complementary Conative styles. And you'll also notice that if you work with someone who is, say, a high quick start and you are a lower quick start, higher follow through, fact finder, more than one number difference in the Conative results creates what is called Conative stress. And that's why you might work with someone who you like as a person, but they drive you a little bit nuts when you actually work on projects with them, because their style, chances are there's probably enough of a difference in your Conative styles that it's creating Conative stress. And so it also helps when you're partnering with other coaches or you're working with a client who wants to take action on a particular project, a wig, or you know, cleaning up their living space, and they're super high fact finders and really low quick starts or follow throughs, and so they end up spending more time imagining the future rather than actually getting things done. And so it helps you as a coach learn how to work with people and find ways to work with their with how they take action in their life. So I love
that.
So
if we post that, should we post all of our numbers?
Yeah, post all of them. Post them in the order that you get them. So like I'm an 8363, which is fact finder, follow through, quick start, implementer. So my primary number is follow through 8. My secondary is quick start 6. But yeah, post them in that order. Quick start. I mean, fact finder, follow through, quick start, implementer. Cool. Yeah, I'll put a reminder in my note too. And it's actually really good for the wig class, which is next week, I believe. It'd be great to know what your cognitive styles are.
Cool. So, Jessica, I have a question about that. This is Tiffany
okay.
again. Sorry, is it good to surround yourself with people that are higher in the areas that you're not, so it's kind of more of a balance, or is that just going to be more frustrating?
It depends. It's a great question. Here's what you'll learn about fact finders. It depends is our go-to answer. It's true. I actually had someone who's a Colby consultant say, your favorite phrase is, it depends. And I'm like, oh, my God, it is. So it completely depends on what you're trying to create or accomplish. So if you're a really high quick start and you're working on a particular project that would benefit from someone who has a higher follow through or a higher fact finder, then it's good to partner with people in that way, or implementer, depending on the project. Cognitive stress comes when you're not aware of it, or when you are so radically different. So my friend Jen Trulson is a really high quick start, but she's actually a pretty high follow through. So she's like a 5 follow through, whereas I'm a 3. I'm a high enough quick start and a high enough, and I'm a high fact finder. But we kind of balance each other out because she's good at following up with me on stuff, and I'm high enough quick start that her quick start doesn't overwhelm me. I think the stress comes when you're really radically different, so that to the point where it's like you have an 8-9 fact finder who tries to partner with someone who has like no fact finder and is a super high quick start, and you're a low quick. It's like, you know what I mean? Like the balance just gets to be so out of sync. One thing I'd love to recommend is that we have a monthly Colby chat with a consultant, Carol Chizik Wilson, and that's a great place. If you get excited about this kind of stuff, which probably means you're a fact finder. Sorry. Just kidding. It's not true. It's Carol's the highest quick start I've ever met, besides Bridget Boudreaux, who's a 9. Just in case you were wondering. So, you know, she has a way to help you kind of, like if you're trying to figure out working with a client or how to better use your numbers, you can find that information on CoachSpot.
Okay.
Did I answer your question, yeah. Tiffany? My it depends answer help?
Yes, the diaper answer is great.
I love it. I was actually thinking that. We must have been in each other's heads momentarily. Adult diaper answer. Perfect.
Yeah.
Any other questions about the ancillary things? Because then we're going to jump into the living space tool.
Jessica,
okay.
You had talked.
Yeah. Sure. Go ahead.
Oh. This is Nikki. You had talked about having a monthly call about the cognitive styles. Is that something we could jump in on, or is that just...
Oh, yeah. It happens monthly, and you can find it on CoachSpot.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Carol Chizik, I think is how she says it, Wilson, runs that, and it's monthly. I think there's actually one tonight. So if you jump on CoachSpot,
okay.
You'll be able to find it.
Awesome. Thank you.
How do you get to Coach Spot again?
Coachspot.marthabeck.com.
Thank you.
And if you're not registered, you'll need to register for info. You can find it under your announcements. You can find more detail on Coach Spot. Coach Spots. Coach Spot. There's only one spot. All right. So any other questions before I jump into the Living Space tool? Maybe even any questions about the metaphor tool?
I did have a question about the metaphor tool.
Okay.
This is Rachel. excuse me. I was working with a friend and a client, actually, and she was talking about negative thoughts, and she named, I asked her to come up with a name, like if it was an animal or something, could it, what would it be? And she said the Tasmanian devil, because it kind of comes and goes. But and whirls around and creates a lot of dust and then leaves. I don't know why, but I know I didn't follow through with that. And the dismount for the metaphor tool is to say more, probably, I would guess. And I don't know.
I think it would be fun. Like, how would you get into the metaphor? Is that what your question? Like, how would you get
get
out?
That is my question, yeah.
Yeah, so I think ultimately, Rachel, the best way to kind of enter into using the metaphor tool in that situation is like, so imagining your thoughts as the Tasmanian devil, where are you in relationship with the Tasmanian devil? How do you feel around that energy? What does that look like? How big is it? Does it have a color? Is there a way for you to slow it down? So you just start getting really curious about, remember, it's like this idea of setting a stage and trying to create a shared picture of the metaphor, so that you can then work with the metaphor as a way to, how do you feel about the Tasmanian devil? Do you want it to go faster, slower, stop? What do you want to do with it? And so if you just work with that metaphor, what you start to do is you get a sense of how this person relates to it, how he or she feels about it, and then what they want to do with it. So then you can say, well, what's one way you could slow it down? Try it now. Take some deep breaths. Do you notice it slowing down? What if you just let it run? Does it eventually slow down itself? And so you just start to get a sense of how to slow it down. And then you can bring it into the practical real life, which is, well, so in relation to your thoughts, how can you use the same idea, like the same principles of slowing the Tasmanian devil down with your thoughts? And you as a coach will have some great ideas, like if you notice you're hooked by a thought, slow it down, write it down, is this true? Or write down all the negative thoughts you're having and then start looking at them one by one. Is this true? How does it make me feel? At that point, you then can give them some of your coaching advice suggestions on how you can begin to work with thoughts in your mind to slow it down. But that's how I would use it. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
So, that's a great question. Thank you so much, because it is sometimes a little bit harder to actually figure out how to use these tools when you get into an actual session with someone. It's like, oh, I love this tool. I will never be able to use it. To have some examples is always really, really helpful. Any other questions or around the metaphor tool?
I think that it's Kristen. The only, I don't know if this is a question or just a response, but I was practicing with somebody a few weeks ago, another cadet in a different group, and she kept switching into the dream analysis tool. And so just being able to contain the difference between those two, and I sort of found when doing the dream analysis, a metaphor popped out. Which was interesting. So it does seem, do you use them hand in hand or in conjunction with each other, or do you feel they
rarely
need to be separate?
Yeah, I rarely.
I know that one is a completely different approach
in terms of internal and external, you know, right brain, left brain stuff, I guess, or maybe they're both right.
Yeah, I rarely use them in conjunction with each other because usually the square that the person's in is very different. It's interesting that she kept switching to the dream analysis tool, and I'm curious, how did that feel for you? Did it feel like it kind of muddied the waters or felt a little bit convoluted? Like, how did you feel about it?
Well, it was frustrating to me because I thought we were doing the metaphor, so I was kind of set up to say how is I was talking about my job situation that I was trying to get out of, and I said, so how that's my problem, that's my puzzle I need to crack. And so I shut my eyes for a second, and I looked up, and I saw this amazing visual, like in a mural behind her. We were in a restaurant, and it was so perfect. And it did pop out as, and she didn't even see it. I said, turn around and look at that. That's what I'm looking at. And it was a picture of a small girl, and she was in black and white, and the background was in color, and it was, you know, lots of symbology in the girl. And in what she was holding, a little bluebird of happiness. So it was really interesting that that's what I woke up to, basically, when I opened my eyes. But how did it feel to me that she switched to that? I was frustrated because I was excited to do that as a metaphor.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, it's really interesting because I could see why she would want to pop over to the dream analysis.
Yeah.
Because of the heavy symbology, but ultimately what you were pointing out and what I would pay attention to as a coach is really what's your relationship with that bluebird of happiness?
Okay.
Where do you want to hold it? How can you bring more color into the picture? Like, I would actually begin working with that picture and drawing the parallels between your job and how you're feeling frustrated about it with, like, do you feel like you have the bluebird in your hand? How can you get it in your hand? Right? I would start really working with it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see how seductive it would be to want to work with the dream analysis because it was a literal picture that probably, you know, kind of captivated and took it away from the metaphor into the symbology.
Yeah. I mean, it was. And also maybe it was just that she didn't understand what the metaphor tool was. I mean, she's a really intelligent person, so I'm sure she was, you know, she was just into the analysis right away.
Yeah, it would be really fun to maybe meet up with someone who's on the phone here and have someone work with you with that image as metaphor, true metaphor, and not dream analysis symbology. So if somebody wants to volunteer on the line here, that would be great. You can do it now or you can, you know, reach out separately. I think that would be really, because, you know, it's also really good for you, too, to say when something's not working with you, and also good for her to remember to ask a client.
Well, yeah, and I kind of went with it because I thought, oh, okay, I'll just go down this road because it's interesting and I might as well just see what I'm not seeing is, you know, it was okay to do that. I thought there was probably value in both of them, so I didn't want to be critical or, you know, disruptive, so I was like, all right, I'll just go with it and see what happens.
Yeah, the challenge, though, is it sounds like you didn't get out of it sort of the puzzle cracking that you would hope to get, because dream analysis is, it's a much more introspective tool that's all about finding meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might have more clarity about the meaning of the symbol, but do you actually have a sense of how to use it?
Got it.
That's my hunch, is that you don't, which might be why it feels less.
Yeah, I just felt a little like it was unfinished, and again, I didn't want to.
Yeah,
you know,
well, it's good. I mean, you're experimenting. It's good to roll with it, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's also good to know it didn't work and that it's time to complete that metaphor. So hopefully someone will be ready to dive in with you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so if you guys want to reach out to Kristen, you can do that or you can volunteer now, whatever feels good.
All right.
So let's move on to the living space tool, because it's another one of those tools that becomes really kind of the backbone of your coaching practice, because the living space is really an extension of metaphor. It's extending metaphor. And if you practice integrity cleanse, you'll know that it's a powerful part of getting into integrity, because our living space, as Thomas More, who's a former monk, current ecologist, says that, you know, every choice that we make in our material world really is a reflection of sort of the quote, living conditions of our interior life. And it's not always super black and white, where it's like, oh, well, this just, you know, my living space is a reflection for how I feel about my job. It might be your job. It might be your relationship. It might be, you know, a variety of different things in your life. And so when you're working with a client, it's really helpful to pay attention and to know enough about them that you can begin to draw the parallels between the issue that they're having and the living space itself. And that'll make sense once we kind of jump into actually doing some examples here. The things that I want to kind of point out about the living space tool is that it's really important that you take very detailed notes about how your client describes their living space. You're going to want to listen to their voice and their energy. Where do emotions get stronger? What phrases? You know, phraseology is very powerful, because there's a real power in when you write down the exact phrase, sort of sharing that back with your client, they get this resonance when you say it back to them, because it's like, oh, whoa, yeah, I didn't know I felt that way. And so being very specific about things and taking very detailed notes is important. You can choose to focus on the interior or the exterior. Ultimately, it can be a space that they spend more time in. It can be an office space or a studio space where they spend a lot of time. So living space I use a little bit loosely, and then it might be that they, you know, an area of least satisfaction in their home, you know, what room kind of are you least satisfied with? It can be a garden or a, you know, I've had it be a deck. I've had it be someone's art space, you know, an art space that they have. And you'll hear things like, well, I really feel like it's neglected. And so there's a real metaphor there in that their creativity feels neglected. Not always, but you'll hear things like that, and you'll begin to notice, like, what does this space represent? The bedroom might feel cold and distant. Maybe their relationship feels cold and distant. So it starts to build. You start to build a picture, and the metaphor starts to draw out very quickly as you're having them describe it to you. You could have someone describe their entire space, but generally we like to focus on your favorite spot, your least favorite spot. And what do you glean? Because part of what we're doing, too, is we're trying to be evocative of feeling states. And so you might spend time, if you have time, you know, normally I just go straight for where are you unhappy, because that's kind of, I'm like, you know, get in there, get some stuff done, and then get out. But if you have time, having them describe their favorite space in contrast with their least favorite space helps them begin to articulate feeling states. So how do you want to feel in this space? You might actually have a compare and contrast between how they feel part of their home versus how they want to feel. So this is, again, you know, as I shared in the metaphor tool class, improvisation is a very important part of Square 3 type of coaching. There are rules of thumb, like make sure you take a lot of notes and repeat things back to them. And then there are things like, well, be curious, see what it's like to compare and contrast a favorite space with a least favorite space. It doesn't always make sense to do that, so you really want to make sure you're listening to your client. Any questions so far? So as you're moving on, so when I kind of think about my ideal coaching session around the living space tool, as I shared, I like to go into what's your least, you know, what's going on in your life, what's an area that in your home that you are unhappy with, then I like to have them describe it. And then when I'm starting to actually work with it, I ask them to say, well, how do you want to feel? Give me three adjectives on how you want to feel in this space. Because when you start tying that room space, this is, again, we're the metaphor tool. When you start tying and connecting their, quote, real life with the metaphor of the living space, having those three adjectives becomes a very powerful touchstone for you to go back when you're working with that client, so that they can keep that as part of sort of the turtle steps that they'll take to improve the space, and keeping those three adjectives in mind. So what I mean by that is, you know, as you wrap up a session, as you're working with the client to actually identify the areas they want to make improvements, and then identifying the turtle steps, we're keeping it in the realm of the metaphor. They are going to make improvements to their literal physical space, and they're going to focus on that as their homework, as their practice, not in the what it's metaphor for. So if their bedroom feels cold and unwelcoming, the homework you're going to give them, the turtle steps you're going to give them, is to make the space warm and welcoming, or whatever you know adjectives they give you. You are not going to focus on the relationship. The relationship, because of the attention they bring to their living space, it begins to naturally move out from the living space to their exterior lives. It's a natural consequence of doing this work. So I say that because a lot of times people are like, okay, well, now how are we going to make your relationship better? No. We're working in metaphor. How are we going to make your living space better? And then just trust that they're, you know, as you move through the process with them, you'll begin to see how it makes their relationship better. Does that make sense? We're working in theory, so I know it's a little bit hard to track. We'll do practicalities in a moment. But is this making sense?
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
Perfect. So let's do some. Let's do some of this. Let's do some live in space tool. And I just want to say too that so how do you want to feel? Find a feeling will come in there. The three B's sometimes come into living space. Turtle steps absolutely come in because they are going to make literal improvements to their living space. And as you do that, you're going to be using some of those ancillary or those complementary tools. But the focus here is really about the metaphor and using living space metaphor. So, Linda,
yes,
volunteered to coach or be coached.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to have you coach, and, you know, I'm here for you. I'm here to support you in whatever way you want. And then I need a client.
I'll be a client.
Who's I?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, this is Electra.
Perfect. So Electra's going to be our client. Just write this down. I like to give y'all credit. Linda, you're going to be our coach. And so Linda, any questions before we get started that I, you know, can answer for you so you can feel like more confident using this tool?
I guess sort of bigger picture, or when you're with a client, what kind of situations do you tend to try using this tool? Like, is it where they're having trouble articulating like what's bugging them, and so, you know, taking them into the living space and using that as a metaphor kind of pull some things out, or like I can see kind of what the tool does, but it's unclear to me when you would go, oh, I'm going to try this, you know, this with this client.
Yeah.
Versus
yeah,
another kind of metaphor or whatever.
Yeah, it's a great question. You can pretty much use it in that context. You can use it in the context where someone's like, oh, my God, I feel like I can't. My house is a mess. Everything's a wreck, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like they introduce the metaphor of the home. You can use it if you hear a particular issue and you have a hunch like, this would be really helpful for me to kind of go into the house. I think it's really just, I mean, we're going to be obviously sort of forcing the metaphor here because Electra knows what's going to happen.
Right.
But ultimately, it's I think it's gut. And I actually will use it if I feel it. I'm like, so tell me, what's the area of, what part of your house do you dislike the most? Or like the least, however you want to phrase it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, huh? And it's like, hang with me for a second. So again, you can introduce it as just a metaphor, but it's all based on sort of that gut instinct of where you want to go.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a great question. I wish, you know, I'm a fact finder. I'm going to say it depends. I'm going to give you the adult diaper answer. So does that not answer your question adequately?
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, it does. Thanks.
Okay.
Jessica, are you suggesting which, sorry to interrupt you guys, but I'm wondering if, Linda, you were asking this too. Is there a recommendation for a square they're in that you should not use this? I mean, you said the dream analysis on this were different squares.
Don't do it with one.
Don't do it with one.
Generally, it's a square three tool because it's a metaphor tool.
Okay.
Square four, it's great if things are generally pretty good, but they're still feeling a little bit stuck in an area of their life, and you know, I've had this house project lingering and I can't get it done. It's like, oh. Let's talk about it. So what's the house project? What are you hoping to accomplish with it? How does it feel? How do you want to feel? What are the challenges? Right? And so then you can start using the metaphor there. But definitely not with one, because you could try it, but it requires a real finesse. Because
is it just
because
it's overwhelming or confusing?
Yeah, it's very overwhelming for people. So I used it with someone in a class, and she's like, I don't know if it's going to work, but let's try it. And we made it work, but she just moved into a new home after a divorce, and she didn't feel safe. And so we talked about small things she could do to make her feel safe, but it required a lot of intervention from me because it had to be very gentle, very small movements, right? Square one, small movements. And we ended up coaching really about why, you know, the bigger stuff, why she doesn't feel safe, period. So I'd say try to keep it to square three, square four. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So, Linda and Electra, when you guys are ready, I am here, and you go for it.
Okay. I'm ready, Linda.
Hey, Electra.
Hi, Linda.
How are you doing?
Good. I'm good.
So, I'd like to ask you to, first of all, think of a living space that you spend a fair amount of time in. So it might be your home, but if it's an office or something else, that would be fine too. And then I'd like to have you describe for me what kind of feels most troublesome about that living space, you know, a particular area that, you know, you just is your least favorite area in the place or just, you know, what kind of rankles in your space?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, Linda, I jumped up at that opportunity because I think I have a very good area of least satisfaction space-wise. And it's difficult because it's been that way for a long time. It has a functionality to it. It is in my house, but it's also / in my garage. And the reasons that it grew up there in a way are, you know, I mean, I'm aware of all the things. It still doesn't change that I have a really kind of love-hate relationship with this area, because it's my office, and it became my office as a result of my husband taking the only other spot that could have been an office, and we originally shared it, and that didn't work very well for me. And so it's an area in the garage. It's not the entire garage. It's a portion of the garage, and it's got a window near it. The window sort of rolls to the right of where my desk is, so it's not right in front of my desk. And then there's a washer and dryer that sort of takes up, you know, washer and dryer space against another wall. But it's a really difficult space, and I've made it work for what I need it to work for, but it has gotten more and more needing to be used as the sort of the business section of my husband's business has changed, and I have done all the accounting for it and all the administrative stuff, and it's a little frustrating. So I've revisited it and visited it and changed it a little bit and tried to tweak with it, and it never seems to work for me entirely, and it always makes me feel like I'm in a cave. It's the complete opposite of the way my house is kind of laid out. And I actually do think it's a metaphor for some things in my own life, which are interesting because my house itself is kind of bright and cheerful and light, lots of windows, and there's a lot of kind of light coming in, beachy, sort of beachy almost. But I'm actually pretty fair-skinned, and I don't like being in the sun. I'm always wearing a hat, you know, sitting in the shade. I don't like being out in the open, but I like the feeling of light. And the office slash cave slash garage is kind of like the dark place. You know, it's like there are times when that sort of works for me, which is, I think, why I moved in there. And there are times when I'm like, oh, my God, I've been sitting in here for, you know, 5 hours. And, you know, my eyeballs haven't hit light at all. It's like a cubicle with my computer and, you know, and I come into the house and I'm like, wow, oh, it's like bright in here, you know. So that's the space. And I don't know if you need a better description, but which I could come up with, but that's the actual space that I'm dealing with that I don't like.
You said that the office, you feel like you're in a cave, and you talked about it being dark versus the light of your house. Are there other, in what other ways does it feel like a cave?
Well, I will say, if I had to come up with sort of, it is dark, and it's sort of like a dark cave. I mean, I call it that because it is dark. You know, it's a garage, and there is a window in there, but it's not a super light-shedding window. So you see the outside, and you see the sun there, but it doesn't, like, reflect in that much. It's also really, like, well, this is interesting. It feels to me like it's got some baggage because it literally has baggage. I mean, it literally is a storage place. You know, there's one side of it that stores stuff. You know, it's a garage. There's my husband's equipment is in there. There's no cars in it. The cars are not in the garage. And there's places where, you know, suitcases are stacked up and, you know, there's a surfboard and there's, you know, it's almost like, it is a storage place with a lot of, you know, chaotically organized stuff. To, you know, like anybody's garage that's sort of organized with shelves and stuff, it's just got a lot of stuff in it. Mm-hmm. And my area has been created out of furniture that nobody wanted in their rooms and sort of filing cabinets and some shelving to, so that it is. It's dark, and it's also, you know, it's part of a larger unit of storage, which, you know, makes it even more sort of claustrophobic in a way. It's not a terribly, like, if people come into my house and they're like, oh wow, you have this little cute area, you know, like that's what they see. What I see is everyone else is in the house experiencing the sort of lighter version of life, and I'm in this, like, somewhat cold, somewhat, you know, cave-like kind of situation. And when I have stuff to do and I don't want to be interrupted, I got to be in there. And there's a part of that that feels like, wow, like I can't even believe I'm in the garage. Like I can't. And it does pose a little resentment for me because I think, and this is something that I have really worked on doing this life coaching stuff, really come to recognize where I have fallen into doing patterns for other people in my family and neglected my own process in my life that needs to be happening. And in a weird sort of way, the stuff I have to do in the garage in this little cubby / desk area that I've created is a symptom of that a little bit. And I've thought of ways to change it, but I haven't gotten to the doing part of that at all.
When you have stuff to do, that's, you know, office activities, how would you like to feel in the space, in a space that you're doing work?
I would like
if
to
you
feel,
have,
yeah.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, you know, see if you can come up with two or three adjectives that kind of would describe, you know, add the feeling state that you'd like to feel when you're doing that kind of work.
I think I'd like to feel more open. I feel like I would prefer things to be lighter colors. You know, I don't. I mean, I think lighter colors and better light and less oppressive shelving sort of with lack of organization probably would make it feel better for me. And in a way, it's not really the space itself that bothers me. It's the sort of haphazard nature of how the stuff all got there. And it's a fair amount of stuff. I mean, it's filing cabinets and it's, you know, a computer and it's a fair amount of like office-y stuff that has set it's set on very dark pieces of furniture and, you know, fairly cluttered. It all sort of came in there one by one. It sort of got created slowly. So then when we opened a business, all of a sudden it had to just function. And there was a few more things added, but it never got created as an actual workspace. And I would like it to be lighter, more open, you know, get rid of extraneous stuff, you know, meaning make it feel like inviting, I guess, and simpler. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So... just pause for a second. I want to check in with you, Linda. What do you think is, what did you hear? What are you noticing about this space? We're coffee talking here. The space and what it means for your client. Sounds like somebody's snoring.
Yeah.
Cracking me up. I don't know if someone's snoring or their dog is snoring or their squeaky hair, we can hear it.
Yeah, it sounds like a dog snoring.
Or at least how my dog snores. So anyway, it stopped. So, Linda, what do you think is going on? Oh, there it is.
Well, I noticed, you know, that I'm hearing the, you know, that just the sense of dissatisfaction with the way the space is. I heard that. She mentioned in the beginning that my husband took the only other spot that was sort of suited to be an office. So there's a sense of or I, you know, I was hearing kind of like, well, you know, this is the only option kind of thing, or that's maybe coming with it. You know, we're talking about the qualities of, you know, that, what is that?
I don't know, and I'm trying to see where it's coming from, and I can't tell.
Do you need me to clarify a little more?
It was the noise. We were trying to figure out where the noise was coming from.
Yeah. It sounds like it's stuff.
Let me say a couple of things because I think this might help kind of give you more focus. And I know that noise is really distracting. So, okay, coming back. So here's the things that I heard, and here's what made me curious as a coach. So I heard, you know, my area is filled with stuff no one wanted. It was some kind of, you know, the feeling is that for me was that it was an afterthought, you know, sort of this, oh, well, here kind of feeling. And she mentioned there's a feeling of resentment, and also the sense, the feeling of, and this is my word, and so Electra, you can correct me where I'm wrong, but it's like banished to this cold, cave-like, dark, haphazard space.
Yeah, that actually kind of works when I'm in a particularly contentious mood. That is exactly how it feels.
Yeah, and so this is. The thing is, I'm also hearing that this is a trend or a pattern in Alexa's life, that there's this doing for others, giving, creating light, creating organization, the very nature of this space is about creating organization. I heard it was your husband's business or your family business, Electra, is that true?
It's our business, but it really is based off my husband's business.
Yeah.
And it's our livelihood, so I'm not criticizing it, but it's
not what I'm saying. But
right.
What I'm
no,
saying
he has
is
the
that,
creative end of it, and I have the more administrative end of it.
Yeah, and so you're getting sort of the quote, you know, what I'm thinking, ugly bits of it, you know, like this. You're organizing, you're giving, you're creating light, and all of this openness to sort of every other part of your home, your life, and that this particular one, which is essentially your career, your gifts, your contribution, is getting banished to this dark place that has no light. And a bunch of other people's baggage, which is not surprising for being the head of a household. That's kind of what can happen. And so, did you hear those? Does that make sense?
Yes. You know, I was kind of torn. As I was listening to her, I was sort of torn with what to. Kind of what to focus on. Like one thing she said was, I can't believe I'm in the garage.
Right.
And I was wondering, well, is the thought like, you know, I'm in the garage. The garage isn't, you know, the garage is the place for other people's stuff. The garage, like, it's just
crazy.
Is, you know, because she also said, I heard her say, at one point, you know, it's so really not so bad. A lot of this stuff that's here, it isn't so bad, and some of it is useful for the office, you know. And so I was wondering, well, is there some? I mean, you know, she said the place is cold and dark, and she would like it to be lighter. But I was sort of like, well, thought work around the symbol, you know, like
maybe
does the garage have to be so bad, or was it just should I just go to a very simple, well, what would be a turtle step to do is to add some light, or
so,
you know.
I think it's kind of going to two extremes. One is the thought work. Let's stick with the metaphor. I like your instinct, but let's stick with the metaphor. And then the other one I think is a little bit too practical too soon. And so what I'm really curious about, and this is why we're talking, because I think this is the artistry of the Living Space tool, is she said how she would like to feel. The other thing I just wanted to point out that you said, Electra, was this life coaching stuff, which again contributed to this feeling of things sort of being an afterthought. You know, my stuff, my life, my career, my business, gets banished to the space. And
it does. I mean, it has. And
so
I'm pretty strong, so I can cope with that, but it does. It gets pushed a little to the side, and I have to fight to keep it in the place that I feel it should be, which is not pushed to the side.
Boom. So that's it right there, Linda.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're trying to build towards, is that how can we create support for our client so that she doesn't have to feel like it's a big fight to keep it at the forefront? How can we keep the light, the openness, less oppressive, more organized space around her dreams, around what she loves? And how can we do it in space itself? And so rather than getting into turtle steps, I think we still need to kind of give our clients some around. So you want it to be more open. You want it to have a lighter feeling, better lighting, more organized and inviting, and less oppressive. So what are some ways that you can create that without taking the turtle steps yet?
Can you explain what the difference between what you're asking Linda to do, which is to open that up, versus asking someone to take a turtle step?
Well, a turtle step means that we have a solution, and I don't have a solution.
Oh, I see. Like an actual solution, something concrete.
Yeah, right now we're keeping with ideation. We're keeping with creativity, because there's a lot of, and I'm going to say stuff to you that I wouldn't normally say to a client, but there's a lot of stuff you could do here. You could be like, you know, storming the castle, taking back your space, kicking your husband into the garage and being like, you make this space work. This is my space, right? There's a whole lot of stuff that could happen here.
Right.
But that's
too
directive.
Yeah.
I want to just let, what are the options? And Linda, that's where your instinct was. So let's kind of keep going in that route. Does that make sense, Linda?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Guide that process. Go ahead. Ask me. Sorry.
So what I guess I'm still a little confused. Is it more to introduce, if Electra would like her office space to feel more open, a little more organized and less colored, and lighter colors and brighter light, what would be, you know, how I guess I'm still unclear what question I'm supposed to ask her that isn't too specific.
That, right there. What are some ways that you can create more openness, more light, more organization, and less oppressive feeling in your working space?
Okay.
And
the
reason we don't take a turtle step yet is because I don't know what we're building towards yet. Because that would presume that I know what she wants to do. And I don't feel clear on that yet.
Okay. Okay, so asking what are some ways is just playing with the ideas. It's not asking yet to commit to one of those ways.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's the difference. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So Electra, what are some ways that you that would be ways to alter the space that might make it feel more open, or have lighter colors or better light, or feel like there's a bit less clutter of other stuff around?
So there's two ways that I think that would work for me. One is to get rid of some of the stuff that I tend to hang on to, which I think is my own baggage, my own stuff. There are things that can go out. And then the other one is, in a way, I think more theoretical, and it is more geared for conversation, because I've used this space to, well, here's how it grew out. Not just that my husband took the office slash guest area as his space. We originally were both in there, but there's not enough space for both of us to do certain type of work because he's on the phone a lot and he's busier and more interruptive sometimes. And I already have a situation, you know, in another work area that somebody interrupts me. So I think I moved into the garage as a way to kind of get some, you know, mental space. But the other part of that is really a conversation. I remember about, I don't know, 6 months ago when my husband said, wow, you've really created kind of a cool little area here. And, you know, I felt like he was going to take it. Like, oh, now that you've fixed it all up, now I could have this space. And this is when my daughter had started, moved out to go to college, and we had to sort of switch rooms around. And he's like, you can move into her room, and that could be your office. And I was like, hang on a second. I don't really want to take our daughter's room, because then whenever she comes back, I am now going to be in Neverland with what I need to do. So you are not going to take my little banishing castle cave problem and then, you know, and use that so that I never have a permanent spot. So I think it's twofold for me, and it's definitely something that I feel a little stuck on, but I do see that there's two ways to improve. One, getting rid of some of my stuff that I don't need to hang on to, and two, having a conversation with my husband and, in a way, with myself as to what is it that I want to create here. Do I want to stay here and make this better, or do I want to move somewhere else in the house that then may end up being sort of temporary? And I think I already answered that question for myself. The answer is I don't want to be put into a temporary zone, so I'm going to make this one work. That was my ultimate feeling, was it's not a bad space. It's got a window. It's got some potential. It's just not it at all. So those are my ideas.
Well, and it's, so tell me where I'm wrong. It sounds like there's maybe a feeling of vulnerability with respect to, you know, your husband, with respect to if you create a cool space, then your husband wants it. So would it, I'm struggling if this is a helpful
just ask,
thing to say.
Because I think you want to ask what I want to ask, too.
I think how would it feel?
Go ahead, Linda.
In the conversation that you're mentioning having with your husband, how would it feel to describe for him your need for a workspace that feels permanent, that feels temporary, that doesn't feel temporary, that feels like yours, and that's where you can do your best work, and that is, you know, really where you can reside? How would it feel to talk with him about that and claim that?
Yeah, I think part of it feels a little anxiety-producing because you know, it's a bit of it is a vulnerable place to be, and I think you're right about, you know, having that feeling of vulnerability. Like, I go out to put something really interesting together, and suddenly, instead of being mine, it's ours. And that, you know, being clear about what I'm creating is that I don't want a space, really. We have a pretty big, you know, we don't have a huge house, but we have a reasonable house. I'm from New York, so everything's teeny there. This is a reasonable-sized house, but I don't really want to be in a shared space with him. I share everything else with him. I share the bedroom. I share, you know, everybody's in a very open kind of one floor space otherwise. And I don't want that. Like, I'd rather have one spot that I don't have to really share. And so I think that conversation is not going to be terrible because my husband's not a terrible person, but it's just clarifying it for myself so I don't feel like I'm being snotty. I think it's hard to do, and I think it does go back to vulnerability and, you know, taking care of everybody else, putting everybody else's needs, you know, kind of in a way forward of mine. You know, it's been a trend through the 20 years of raising kids and being married, and that trend is breaking out a little now. And you know, that's interesting to me. But it's, you know, it's definitely kind of new for
so,
me at, in this phase of my life.
So I'll just pause. So Linda, this is where I do thought work. Because we came to a very clear sort of sense of what she wants her space to look like. So it's not just that it's not temporary, but it's saying I want a space that's open, that's lighter, that there's better lighting, that is more inviting and more organized, less oppressive. And then did you hear what happened when you asked what would it feel like to have that conversation? I don't want to be snobby. I don't want to ask.
Yeah, I wondered if that was a thought to, or I was thinking, oh, I would want to hear, say more about, why does asking for a space that you don't have to share feel snobby.
Good.
Or
so Electra.
Okay. So is that the question? Why does asking for a space of my own, a room of my own, feel snobby? I don't know. I think my husband sometimes interprets things like that. Or my tone, and I'm not listening to myself outside of myself, so maybe my tone is sometimes a little bit snobby or obnoxious, and he interprets it, he even amplifies it, and maybe when I'm at my most irritated is when I go in to have that conversation, which, you know, would not be a good time to have it, would be better to have that kind of conversation when I'm relaxed and can be more grounded. So, you know, that's a work I have to do to be able to communicate. And also he sort of baits me sometimes. I think he does it on purpose. And I think he kind of means to do, but he also kind of doesn't. I think it's just the way he operates a little, but I've been, you know, I'm trying to work on that with myself. Like he said to me at one point when we were talking about the life coaching, he did not mean to, but he did sort of belittle it, and he was trying to get me to have an argument about it, and I turned around and said, I really like took that off the table. I said, I don't want, this is one area which, you know, making a joke or belittling it or even belittling the sort of quality of it. That's not where I'm going with this, and I don't want to be irritated about it. I mean, because that's not a place that I want to be defending, really. I don't feel like I have to defend that. So, you know, it's come up, and I think that's where the snotty thing is. I feel like I get a little snotty and snobby about what I need, instead of just making it a thing that I actually need, or opening it up to, this is something that's important to me.
Okay. So let's just take a pause, because I'm looking at the time and I'm thinking about where we go next. And so I'm just curious, what did you hear in that, Linda?
What I was thinking about asking was, you know, the whose business question, you know, whose business is it You know, whose business are you in if you're imagining your husband's reaction to what your need is? And
exactly.
I was unsure about that because I was sort of like, how does that help? Or how?
I think it helps. Whose business are you in when you're worrying about managing your husband's reactions and feelings?
Yeah, probably. You know, my reaction would be, I'm in his business.
Absolutely. Because we can't possibly, he's not here, we cannot coaching him, we can't possibly know. Yeah, I mean, sure, you have precedent, you have experience, but you also have precedent and experience based on unconscious thought patterns. And so what he reacts to and how he behaves is in direct response with your belief system and how you react and how you behave, right? You have this unconscious pattern with each other. And
mm-hmm.
because we can't coach him, he's not here. We can only coach
but
you.
I'm in his business, so I would.
You're 100% in his business, yeah. So, Linda, you're spot on. So then what do you want to know? So if she's in his business, then what?
I guess I'm curious to know that if his business and his reaction to anything is just off the table, is Electra does if for a moment just imagine your husband can't react in any negative way about mm-hmm. you asking for your own space. Do you when you think about claiming your own office space that is not temporary and has the characteristics you want, is there still a sense that would feel snobby?
No, actually, taking that off the table, getting out of his business, I don't feel snobby at all. Which is, kind of nice.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling right now?
So now I don't
check in with yourself right now. How are you feeling?
Me or Linda?
Linda, I just wanted to check in as the coach. How are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling confused. I'm feeling confused about where, how to continue to coach in. And what would be most beneficial for Electra?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting question because I think ultimately this is how I would do it. So Electra, you can't think the thought, I'm being snobby for asking what I want. So what are some next steps that you would like to do in order to resolve this space? Like, we don't have to completely fix it. We've got it,
Right, I get it.
We got another session. We can check back in. We can do it. But what are some next steps that you'd like to do considering that you want a space that feels open, lighter, more organized, less oppressive, and that's not temporary? And knowing
right.
that some of it means getting rid of something of yours, which might be literal and might be your thinking. There's sort of twofold there. But also having a conversation with your husband. So if you consider that as sort of a buffet of things, what's a next step that you would like to take to create a space you want?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like Linda had tapped on a few things that really stood out to me, which was that vulnerability, being in his business, and I suddenly had this sort of feeling like, regardless of what my husband says or does or reacts to, or if I take him a little bit off this equation, I could actually say that I'm using that as an excuse for not actually just doing what I need to do, which is to have the conversation with myself, to get rid of stuff both literally and mentally, you know, where do I complete the action instead of stopping halfway through? And so those are things that I think I could do. I could, you know, start to take my my personal concept of some of this stuff and really, I've been reading this book called, for a year now, it's not like it's new, called the Magical Art of
Tidying Up.
Tidying Up, and I ordered that book before it even came out. I pre-ordered it, and then it was the only book I brought to the that weekend that we just had. It was the only one I had. I said, I'm going to really read this on here. And, you know, some of that book is a little kooky, but the concept of taking something that is yours and deciding whether or not it's something that's, you know, working for you or not is an interesting idea. And I think I could do that, and I've been resistant to doing that in that space because what I see is that because it houses storage, I see it both as a storage area and I see it as a workspace. And I don't know that my actual workspace can also function as a storage area. So I think dealing with that would be a huge step for me in terms of resolving some of the things that you just said.
Okay, so here's my suggestion. Here's my prescription for healing. does it feel reasonable for you? So here's what I heard you say, essentially. Finish that book. Get really clear on the principles, because what she would say in her book is that storage for things that don't bring you joy in a space where you're meant to be productive does not work.
Right. No, that's exactly what she said.
So finish that book, look at what she says, start working on the physical space. But I'd like you to just start by finishing the book, because you said you've been reading it for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Does that feel?
Yeah, I've been in and out of that book for a year.
Yeah.
It's not even a long book. That's what's hilarious about it.
No, I know. It's a very
small
tiny
book. It's a little
weeny
book.
It's a tidy book.
It's a tiny little book. That shouldn't be hard to read.
And the other thing is, I think you still have some thinking that needs to be cleaned up. And so my suggestion is, before you make any big moves on deciding what to do with the space, how to proceed, what you want it to be, all that, is just focus on sort of the foundation of what a space should feel like for you and getting some confidence and clarity around that. And then just work on cleaning up the belief systems here. Because what I heard was just a barrage of, like, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years and my stuff goes to the side and I don't want it to be temporary and it always feels right. I just heard a lot of things there that I think slowing down and having someone go in depth on, it's snobby for me to have to ask for my own space.
Mm-hmm.
Or however that resolves, but really spend time doing thought work on that.
Okay.
Nothing more than those two things. So getting coaching and getting clarity around what that book means for you. If you want to take more steps, like if you want to clean out your entire garage, great. But that's the only thing. Those are the two turtle steps for now. How does that feel?
I think it's daunting. I mean, it's what I found interesting about this space work. I mean, it's a bit daunting when you attack an entire area.
You know why it's daunting? It's because you have a bunch of crappy beliefs around it.
Mm-hmm.
When you have cleaned up your thinking, it will feel much less daunting. You will have a renewed vigor.
Okay. That makes sense.
It feels daunting because it's laden with meaning.
Mm-hmm.
The space is so much bigger than you. It's a whole belief system behind it.
Yeah, I think that that's correct. I think I think any space is, but I think when you add,
there's another belief. So notice.
Well,
notice.
Maybe any of my spaces. I mean, that might
yeah,
be
Yeah, I think that might be true.
What
because
I'm saying
probably
any space that I'm in.
You know why? Because you've, for the past 20 plus years, you've been creating space for everybody but you.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me where I'm wrong, of course. But
you know, I think that's right.
And so who am I in my home when I don't have a space that really fits me? Yeah, that's, we've tapped into a huge iceberg of beliefs, which is, once you start unraveling them, they're going to all come apart very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why it feels so daunting.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think actually I need to do some work on that because the clients that I'm attracting are mothers in similar situations with
yep.
similar issues that they really want help on, and living it to give it and dealing with my own judgments around this is important because those are the clients that are coming knocking on my door.
Well, you know, and you guys are gonna notice this with in these classes and then just in life in general is you'll notice a lot of, especially because we have a lot of women in the program, a lot of women are coming to coaching because they're trying to make space for themselves in their lives. And so the living space tool will often reveal this idea of, you know, my kids, my husband, my mother-in-law, whomever it is, have taken over my space / life. And I don't know who I am in this space / life anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sometimes it's very easy because they've kind of worked enough beliefs that they know it's time to make space. And you're at the beginning of that, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
You're exactly where you are meant to be, and that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so how was that for you, Electra?
It was good. It was a little anxiety-producing.
We could feel it.
I haven't. I felt a little anxiety around it. I felt Linda tapped in on some important little things. Like I felt like her wording, even though she felt confused, was helpful. And you know, I felt safe in that way because, you know. There's a vulnerability just to even volunteering for stuff and showing your true, you know, things that aren't working.
So it was
really good. I think I jumped at that chance. I got the last time I was on, I was having some phone issues and it was good. I mean, it was hard. It was a little anxiety producing, but it was good.
Yep, perfect. Thank you. I agree. So Linda, I know that was confusing, and I'll explain why in a moment, because my hunch is you are an empath and you were picking up on some very big stuff.
I think I just, in terms of doing this and then also meaning coaching and then coaching, you know, where this is the tool, you know, we're working with a particular tool and we're, you know, I was sort of caught like, you know, well, is it thought work? Is it metaphor? Is it,
yes,
you know, and then, you know, the business question and I get that that's totally, you know, that the art of doing this is following your hunch and so forth. But I felt as, here's a metaphor. I felt I was standing in the circle of having all of these tools surrounding me and just kind of whirling and going, where, when it started to feel like, this is an iceberg, you know, a tip of an iceberg, as many things are, and you know, there's some stuff here, and so then I was questioning, I was looking at the clock as well, and like, you know, what?
Sure, yeah.
Where do we go?
I felt it all. Yeah, I felt it all.
And sort of. Yeah. So that's it.
Yeah, no, I just want to say that you have really strong instincts, and I appreciated you wanting to do thought work. The reason I paused you is because I wanted you to see before you moved away from this, and this was really purely educational. In a session mm-hmm. with a client, you might move very quickly to thought work, but I wanted you to hang in a little bit more because I didn't want to discharge the discomfort too quickly. Because I think what happened by sticking with the metaphor a little bit longer, we actually got closer to what the limiting belief was.
Yeah.
Now,
all
streams lead to the sea, so you would have gotten there regardless. But I wanted you to see in the course of the metaphor tool, I wanted you to feel kind of how things move from the theoretical to the ideational to the practical. So the sort of, I don't like it, and this is what I would, in theory, what I'd like, and da-da-da-da-da, and then into the, well, I guess kind of what I'd like it to look like is maybe, I wanted you to hear that part before we moved into practical. And what happened is, this is my hunch of what happened is, you are an empath, and so you were picking up on your client's anxiety, which was manifesting as confusion in you. Not just because I'm button my nose in every 10 seconds, but also because your client just admitted, yeah, I was feeling pretty anxious because, you know, I can feel there's a lot of stuff around this.
Mm-hmm.
That is very common. Electra is extremely bright. And so what happens is when we have a very intelligent client, you know, someone who's a real thinker, an intellect,
mm-hmm.
I will feel very, very confused when I'm talking with them because it usually means they're using their intellect to try and talk themselves out of their feelings.
Oh.
And that's what I can, and Electra, you can tell me to shut up or where I'm wrong, but when I have a client who's very smart, I start to feel confused because they're so bright that they're trying to convince themselves these feelings aren't okay. That's anxiety.
And that I was sort of having the top-down, what I call it lately, a top-down feeling of where the head feels really full. And it like in my own body, it would feel like my head trying to convince my body of something.
Yeah.
And that sort of crazy in the head. I do it all the time to myself.
Well, you're also very intellectual, that's why, and I can hear that with you. Because I heard you, that standing in a circle trying to decide what to do meant that you were in your head.
Yep.
Rather than being in your body and really listening. And so what I'll do sometimes is I'll actually stop the session and be like, okay, let's just take a few deep breaths. Let's get back into our body. And then how are you feeling right now? And then we would have gotten information like, oh, I'm feeling kind of anxious because I'm realizing how big this is. And, you know, this is part of the challenge of using, in Coach the Coach sometimes using a particular tool, is we hit a session where someone's a lot more sort of at the latter part of a square one or is, you know, still got a story or hasn't done that, whatever it might be. And so we have to kind of pause and get back into our body. So that's a good sign for
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Feel that top down, you know, head is doing all the work. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of story here.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would love for you to do is when you're not in the pressure of me watching and a class of people and me telling you have to use the metaphor tool, I'd love for you and Electra to meet up separately. It doesn't even have to be in the next week. It can be whenever is convenient for both of you. But I'd love for you to support Electra in that second part, or actually in both parts of her, quote, assignment.
Okay.
Which is when the pressure's off, spend time slowing way, way down with the thoughts. And what's going to happen, here's my hunch, because Electra's very smart, is she's going to have a lot of thoughts. It's okay mm-hmm. for you to pick one and stick with it.
Okay.
And that's only if you guys both feel good about it. So if Electra, you don't have time or you want to work with a buddy.
No, I'm game if you are, Linda.
Yeah, I'm game.
for sure.
I'd like for you to clean up the belief system, really work on finding space in Electra's life for her. Like, who does she want to be in this life now? She's got kids going off to school. Spaces are opening up. She's got a new career percolating. Okay, well, let's get the stinking thinking out of the way so that we can make space for the dreams to come in. And then you can use the metaphor of the space again, you know, with some of the cleaning up and the book and whatever, but let's just focus on the belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you kind of, now that I've given you some tips, like when you're working with a really intellectual and intelligent client, bring them back into their body as often as possible.
Yeah.
Slowing down, less words, kind of like that exercise when we were in the at the meet and greet, sort of the chaplaining, making sure there's enough space for processing, but that there's also not too much space to perpetuate painful belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I think this is just about you learning to trust yourself and having the confidence to understand and interpret the feeling in your body and how that's actually a mirror for what's happening in your client. Once you get that down, it's going to help you feel so much more confident to know how to direct a session.
That makes a lot of sense.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we learn neurons, and I'm like, oh yeah, that makes all sorts of sense. Okay, with what you resonate with, what your client's dealing with,
but when you're on display,
the experience of it was new, or just sort of.
Well, it's hard to know. Yeah. Like, okay, am I confused because Jessica's confusing me? Very well, possibly. Or am I confused because my client is anxious and is trying to repress the feelings that are coming up inside of her? And intellectualize them, rationalize them, whatever it might be. I don't know. I mean, Electra would tell me where I'm wrong and all of that, but it's just an opportunity for you to listen to yourself so that you know how to then put it out in theory, your hypothesis, and how to use the mind-body tools to bring her back into her body. So, okay. So if you guys can, kind of do a little bit of slowing down, some work on that, and then get back to me, that would be great. In the meantime, please, for your practice, please practice the living space tool with at least one other person, a buddy, a client, between now and our next class, which I believe is next week.
Yes, it is.
And practice with one person and just know now what it feels like when there might be a tip of an iceberg of a belief system, and how you can still make progress with the metaphor of the living space, but also how there then it might get to a point where you do need to do some cleanup around beliefs. Other people that might not happen with everybody, but it does happen occasionally. Any questions, final thoughts? I know we're over here, but I'd love to answer anything.
I wanted to get the name of that book. I couldn't remember the name of the book.
The magical
art of tidying up.
It's the life-changing magic of tidying up, I think.
The life-changing magic of tidying up.
It's by Marie Kondo, Kondo. And Martha makes fun of her all the time, and that's only because she's jealous. she admits. but the biggest takeaway of that book that I would love for everybody to kind of pay attention to in relation to this living space tool is what sparks joy in your life. And so this idea of having a storage space of things that aren't really used, memories, you only keep things that spark joy. Now, my philosophy on that is I like my luggage because it sparks joy at the thought of traveling. And I have one bag that no longer sparks joy, so it's time to replace it. That's kind of how I interpret this idea of sparking joy. So you'll find she's a little nuts in terms of
she is.
The criticism.
See,
but
not in a bad way. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a little – a little OCD about tidying up. I mean, she's been tidying up since she was five, so there's something there. But she's a great example of how someone takes something that could be seen as a negative and turns it to an absolute positive.
Well, I'm going to say
her website is. I was just going to say it's tidyingup.com.
Tidyingup.com. Yes, an electric.
I want to say, can I say one thing because I think this is important? She actually has a couple things in her book that seem like she takes them very concretely or like they're real, whereas I think there's a lot of metaphor there that one can apply to one's own life. Like she actually has a chapter on waking your stuff up, and I honestly think there's a part of her that believes she's actually waking the stuff up. I think that's a metaphor for waking yourself up in relation to the stuff that you're looking at, because really, you know, really it's yourself that has to relate to the thing that you're trying to decide whether it's sparking joy or not.
Right, right. Yeah. She gives a lot of, she anthropomorphizes things a lot more than perhaps others might. So.
But it is kind of fun. And
it's
you
really
can have
fun
with it. You can slap your stuff and go, wake up. Do I like you or not? Are you something I want?
Oh, please, please, God, if you slap your stuff to wake it up, send me a video.
I wish I could have sent you a video of me going through my book and my friend helping me. She was slapping the books, and I was busy, you know, putting them in piles and going, what are you doing? And she goes, I'm waking up your book. And we were howling.
Good. So if anybody else goes through this exercise, or when you do this with your office space, please, somebody send me a video because I need a chuckle. I will delight in you. So, all right. So any other questions besides what was the name of the book, anything else, and why is Marie Kondo so loopy?
Hi, it's Kristen. I have a question about when it's a whole house situation, is that a different story? Is that a square one thing? Is that,
just,
you know.
You start with a one place, or you can even start with, like, the why. You know, why is it so dissatisfying, the whole house? How does it make you feel? And then how do you want to feel? And then if that feels like you're kind of hitting a cold place, like, ugh, you know, I can't work with an entire house, ask what place in particular, because it will invariably be a metaphor for some other thing.
Okay.
Because, like, my whole house is really cute, but I don't like living where I live. And so my house can feel like a little bit of a prison. It's like, okay, well, that's a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I feel imprisoned? Why am I here? Why do I stay here? Why, right? So then I start getting all of this information. But we could have started very easily from my whole house. It's on a hill. It's hard to get up. It feels inaccessible. And then I can drill down.
I just meant in the situation where you can't pick a room because they're all, you know, they all need to be cleaned up.
Okay. So pick the area of least satisfaction. What room is the worst, and why?
Okay.
Is this your house? I can't wait.
It is my house right now, yes.
Yeah, well, and so why is your whole house in such disarray?
The word forgotten comes to my mind.
Okay.
So
where
that...
in your life are you forgotten? What have you forgotten?
Mm.
So I really want one of you guys to work with Kristen because I really want to know the answer and how this goes. So if you guys could connect and tell me, I'd appreciate it. Because my marmoset is like, oh, like dancing around.
No, I'm usually Sophia. No, I have all kinds of fun stuff going on right now.
Perfect. Well,
so.
Somebody in the group volunteer to take
question,
please.
I'll take more than one.
Yeah. Do a group session on you, girl.
Yeah, it sounds good. I thoroughly enjoy coaching everybody else, too, so anybody who needs me.
Yeah, reciprocity is perfect. Any other questions? This is always after a meet and greet where we've met each other. We never want to get off the phone. So, Yeah. All right. So thank you so much. I will see you guys next week. Oh, so your homework to practice, it's actually a practice, is to practice with at least one other person, and be prepared to kind of let me know how that goes next week. And then I'm going to ask you to post a wildly improbable goal on the forum. I will post that, but I want you to respond with a wig. And remember, the wig is you have a beloved activity, something that you love doing. And then what would the wildly improbable version of that look like? And then we'll talk around how to coach people around wigs next week. And if you're in square one or square two and you're like, well, I don't even want to think about it, you don't have to. All right. Thank you, everybody. I will talk to you next week, and I really appreciate all your attention today. And good coaching, good clienting, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica.
Bye, Jessica.